So I grew up in a situation that probably matches what many of you think of when it comes to the telephone. In my household, we had one phone line and a couple of places that we could pick it up. I remember many days before the cordless phone where you had a long stretched out cord if you even wanted a modicum of privacy when the phone rang. But when I was a kid, when the phone rang, even though it was probably a telemarketer, if someone was home, we found a way to answer it. Today, I live in a different time, and technology is interesting. I don't have one phone in my house, but every person in my household has a number to which they can be reached. And it doesn't just ring on a phone. It rings on a phone, any connected computer, iPad, and maybe even a watch. If you're listening to headphones on one of your devices, it rings there too. But somehow, with all of that, if I am at the grocery store or the pharmacy, and I have a quick question, and I know that everyone is home, I can call all five numbers and never get a response. Maybe it's a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, but I find that frustrating. And we laugh at that. But how many of us, when God calls, say, I'm too busy, I'm too tired? How many of us don't answer? Sadly, I say it's often. Again, I hear I'm too busy, I'm too stressed, I'm too tired, and we ignore God's call, missing the opportunity to be empowered by Him as we partner in His work of building the kingdom. Now, make no mistake, God still accomplishes His purpose. You can skip out on God's blessing by not giving Him your first fruits, but it doesn't mean that He's without resources. You can choose not to answer God's call, but it doesn't mean that He's going to say, oh, I guess that's not going to happen. He'll find a way. It's amazing sometimes to watch as God weaves everything together, and I wonder how many people hit ignore or snooze when His call came in, yet God still accomplishes His purpose. But when we send God to voicemail, when we ghost Him and let Him do and use His purpose through someone else, we are the ones who miss out on the opportunity to be empowered by Him as we partner to do the work of building the kingdom. There are times I've gotten this right, and there are certainly times I've gotten this wrong. When we look at Genesis 41, when we look at the text that I just read, we see an important moment in Joseph's life. An inflection point. A point in which the journey in his life takes a curve. Where God changes everything. And it happened because Joseph was ready and answered the call when God came. When Joseph's moment was there, when God called, Joseph was ready. And I believe that if we follow his example, we can be ready too. Because God will call. And I've had people come to me and say, Pastor, yeah, God called. I hit snooze. I hit ignore. And He's not going to call again. That's not how it works. God will continue to call. He'll continue to give you opportunities. But we want to be ready when He does. And again, if we follow the example we see from Joseph in Genesis 41, I believe we will be. The first thing I want to draw our attention to this morning is that Joseph understood that God's deliverance often comes as grace through pain. Genesis 41, verse 14. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Now, Joseph was, we believe from the scriptures, 17 when he was sold into slavery, when he was trafficked by his brothers. And now, as he is brought up from the dungeon to stand before Pharaoh, he is 30 years old, which means that he has spent the last 13 years, in pain, in frustration, in exile. I have heard, and I've even read commentaries where people start to say, well, things weren't so bad for Joseph. But our text is very clear that he was brought from where? The penthouse in the jailers? No. He was brought up from the dungeon. And I have never found a dungeon that I got very excited about. A dungeon is not, it's not the motif any of us are looking for on the Home and Garden channel. In the past 17 years have either been spent in Potiphar's house dealing with all of that mess with Potiphar's wife, or they've been in the dungeon. 2 years ago, 2 years before this moment, that even before he can stand in front of Pharaoh, he has to be cleaned up, okay? Pulled from the dungeon. He's got to shave. He's got to change his clothes. He's got to clean up just to be able to stand in front of Pharaoh for a moment. 2 years, though, prior, he had his experience with the cupbearer and the baker, and they said, we'll remember you, and they forgot. I can't blame the baker too much because he was busy being impaled on a post. That sounds awful. But the cupbearer quickly went on to live his life until this moment. The Pharaoh has a dream that he can't figure out. None of the magicians and wise men in the kingdom can figure it out. And the cupbearer, it's now convenient. It's now beneficial for him to say, hey, I know a guy. And at 30 years old, Joseph's moment comes. But that moment didn't come quickly. 13 years. 13 years. When I went to Bible college, I remember how much other young men complained about having to spend 4 years in preparation to become a pastor. It's amazing. Jesus spent, what, like 30 years to have 3 years of ministry, and most of us pastors want to spend 3 years to have 30 years of ministry. This idea of enduring hardship and pain to be put in a position where we can be used by God is something in our Western culture I think we struggle with. But Joseph spent 13 years, many of those in the dungeon. Even after granting favor in the eyes of the jailer, the text makes it clear that life wasn't easy. Then we see in verse 30, but 7 years of famine will follow them. This is talking about the dream. Then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten. The famine will ravage the land. The abundance of the land will not be remembered because the famine that follows it will be so severe. Again, the reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in the two forms was that this manner had been firmly decided by God. And God will do it soon. I think many of us, if we had heard this interpretation, would ask the question, why? God, if your plan is to spare us, if your plan is to save the day, why? Why don't you just skip the famine part? Why do we have to have all the cloak and dagger? Why do we have to have the mystery and the dreams? God, if your plan is to not have everyone die from the famine, just make it rain. Why, God, do you have to have suffering be part of your plan? You know why I think many of us would ask that question? Because in some form or another, I've heard so many of us, I've heard Beth and I ask some form of that question as we endure the hardship and the suffering that God has allowed in our life. God, if you have made us overcomers, isn't it time for us to overcome? Why do we have to endure and patiently wait through these things if your plan all along is deliverance? Christians often cite to one another, God will not give you more than you can bear, more than you can handle. And the idea is that we can only handle so much. And God's going to bump us there, but not go over. But as we look at Joseph's life, Joseph learned and understood that God's deliverance and his grace didn't come and take you out of the fire. It gave you the ability to endure and sustain through it. And this is modeled over and over and over again in the scriptures. We see it in the life of Daniel and his friends later in the Old Testament. We see it in the story of Israel over and over again, that God doesn't deliver them without suffering. He delivers them through the suffering. Daniel, well, his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they end up in the furnace, but God preserves them in the furnace. Daniel doesn't get to skip the lion's den. He's in the lion's den, but God holds shut the mouths of the lions, only to open them up when his enemies are thrown in later. And some would argue maybe it's because of the professors that I had, especially Dr. Gehrig, that when it comes to my view of the end of times, when Jesus comes to prepare his church, there are many in Christendom, and I'm not insulting anyone, that believe wholeheartedly that God will keep the church from any suffering and will rapture us at the very beginning. And don't get me wrong, I'd be okay with that. But as I see the course of how God uses his people throughout the scriptures and history, I see a trend where God preserves his people through the fire and the suffering and the hardship. See, if we get it in our mind that walking with Jesus means that we don't endure hardship, that we don't carry a cross, that we don't sacrifice, if that's what we believe, when these moments come, we aren't going to understand what God's doing. We're going to turn around, we're going to quit, and we're going to say, I'm done with all of that. But Joseph endured for 13 years, and so when he sees that God's plan, that his interpretation of the dream is that there will be 7 good years where they have an opportunity to prepare, followed by 7 brutal years, he's not surprised by how God's plan would work. And for Pharaoh, if anything, was a man who knew how to read the room. In the same way that Joseph wouldn't ask God, why wouldn't you just make it rain? As he is looking at this man across from him, who he knows has endured 13 years, yet has the power of God within him, and is the only in his kingdom prepared to interpret his dream. I think he understands that if God will have those he loves, those who serve him, endure hardship, then enduring hardship but preserving to the other side could very well be his plan for the nation of Egypt. So God called them to endure hardship. from a historical standpoint, we also can't miss how important these 14 years were in creating the nation of Egypt into what it is and what it was, even in the time of Jesus' birth. It's hard for us to picture these tiny societies. I remember going back and looking in history books, even not that far back, to like the birth of America. And America was like fewer people than Indiana when the Revolutionary War happened. I mean, think about that. There were like about as many people that live around Fort Wayne in all of the colonies when the Revolutionary War happened. We often put things, we see the world that we understand and we try and put it back in time. The nation of Egypt was way, way, way back then very small, and it was lots of shepherds, and it was early days of farming. It wasn't that big, and Egypt at this point wasn't that powerful. There were no super kingdoms, like we would later see in the scripture through what Egypt becomes, Babylon, Assyria, Greece, Rome. This was a new thing. And it was all beginning now. Because as God's plan came into effect, as Joseph was the manager that created the silos and the grain bins and the plan to store this up, the following 7 years of famine, not only did it save the lives of everyone in Egypt, but all the peoples from around the ancient Near East came and they sacrificed their treasure, they sacrificed their wealth at the feet of Pharaoh to buy grain. That's where we're going to see Joseph, whose family, we have Israel and Joseph's brothers, who are quite wealthy in their own right, a distance away. They get reunited with Joseph, and that's going to be later in our story, when they come up to do that very thing. They go and they find all the money that they have, all the coin, all the wealth, so that they can buy enough food to get through those years of famine. God doesn't just preserve Egypt, but he preserves the entire ancient Near East, and he creates one of the first super kingdoms of wealth and resources in the nation of Egypt. This is no small thing that God is doing. And I think it was important that Joseph not only understood from a textbook or that he understood it intellectually, but he understood it from experience. That God can walk his people through suffering. He knew it. He'd done it. He'd walked that path before. Second thing I want to draw our attention to is that Joseph used his moment of opportunity to humble himself and glorify God. Verse 15, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream and no one can interpret it, but I have heard it said that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. And listen to Joseph's response. I cannot do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. We cannot gloss over the boldness and the faith that Joseph had in his response. Ancient kings have never been known for their patience. I mean, think about it. Maybe you've seen a show like Game of Thrones, or there's like a Catherine the Great, or you know, even if you don't go back that far, when things weren't quite as brutal and savage, if you said in the first 30 seconds the thing the king didn't want to hear, you could end up dead. And it was no different in Egypt. Remember, Joseph had interpreted the dream and the fate of the baker. And it wasn't, when Pharaoh doesn't like what you did, he will give you a firmly worded rebuke. It wasn't Pharaoh will put you in your place. It wasn't even Pharaoh will throw you in prison. It's Pharaoh will impale you on a post. And he will leave you there as an example for everyone else in the kingdom to see until your body is rotten and putrid enough that no one wants it around anymore. I don't think that I could blame Joseph if he chose to be a little more careful in his response to Pharaoh and say, "Yes, sir, I know exactly what your dream means." And then he gave God the credit on the back end. I can't say that I personally would have blamed him, and I don't know that I would have done it the way Joseph did. But God has prepared Joseph to be able to stand boldly with lots of faith before the most powerful man in the room. We can't gloss over that. When his moment came, when the opportunity came, Joseph was filled with boldness and faith, and he humbled himself. He said, "I can't, but my God can." I thought a lot about this, and it's maybe because sometimes I'm a little slow, that it took me a while for God to give me, I think, a powerful revelation in my own life. A powerful realization. So why was Joseph able to stand before Pharaoh in boldness and confidence unlike anything Pharaoh had ever seen before? How is he able, after enduring such hardship? At first I wondered, was it because Joseph just didn't care anymore? Was he just ready to be done regardless of what happened? Was he just so burnt out and tired? I don't think that's the answer. The more I thought about it, the more I began to understand that the reason that Joseph could stand before Pharaoh humbly and with such faith and boldness and confidence is because Joseph had made a habit of standing before the Most High God of creation every day. See, if you stand before the God of the universe, if you have sought the face of the God of all creation, then Pharaoh doesn't seem that scary because he's just a man. Why could Stephen in the early church, one of the first deacons, why could he stand with such confidence and faith before the Sanhedrin to the point where he was murdered with rocks and still his face shone like the face of God? Because he was used to standing before God, it didn't make man all that scary. Why was Daniel able to walk boldly into the lion's den? It was because he stood before God, and man wasn't that scary. So Joseph, he used this moment, this opportunity to humble himself, and he could do so because he was used to standing before God. There was a musical that some of you may have heard about called Hamilton. One of the big songs had the chorus, "I don't want to waste my shot." This idea that when my opportunity comes, I don't want to waste it. Joseph was able to stand boldly, to not waste the opportunity, to say, don't look at me, look at my God, because he'd spent so much time. It's the one beauty of the dungeon. And even though he had responsibilities there in the jail to the jailer, one of the beautiful things about the dungeon is that you have time. Talk to men who've served in prison. And they said the one thing you have plenty of in prison is time. And Joseph used that time wisely. Again, to stand, to kneel, to pray before his God. So many of us, we might have said, God, you failed me. God, this hurts too much. God, I don't like what's happening. God, have you forsaken me? But Joseph continued to worship God through the pain. And finally, we see that Joseph was ready for his next assignment only because of the hardship he had endured. Genesis 41, verse 39. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. So, question, is it inherently obvious to us that being able to interpret dreams qualifies you for managing a program as vast as collecting grain throughout the nation of Egypt for 7 years and then being in charge of how to distribute it? It's like one of the early forms of the IRS here. It's kind of complicated. In management, there's something called the Peter Principle. And because it's called the Peter Principle, I've heard people, oh, it's like a biblical concept, right? Not at all. It's a management concept. Different Peter, not the one from the Bible. But it doesn't make it less true. And I have found both in the work of the church and in personal business, it's very true. The long short of it is that if you have levels of responsibility, the Peter Principle says that if you run it enough times, almost every time, you will get promoted one level beyond your competence. Because what do? We see that someone is doing really well in the job they have, and we give them the next level of responsibility up. And we do that up into the point where they don't do such a good job anymore. And it means that in most business places, most people are probably most qualified for the job they used to have. Because if you stop performing well, you won't get promoted again. But very rarely does somebody get demoted back down a level. And so we often have companies, and I have worked with some big companies. It's amazing to me, some of the customers I've had, I've watched where they went from being a privately held company to a publicly traded on the stock market company, and it makes me wonder why I have any money in the stock market. Because I watch a company that was doing so well, all of a sudden, all the incentives are just wrong. And everyone's promoted into positions of incompetence. And it's scary to watch how just poorly things are managed. And the only thing that changed was now that they're on the stock market. I'm sure that's not the only thing that changed, but it was a big one. But again, I think for Joseph, this Peter Principle comes into play. In what way does being able to interpret dreams make you qualified for this type of management project? And the answer is, it probably didn't. That's not why he was ready. Do you know why Joseph was ready to manage a project like this? Because he had spent the time in the dungeon managing the jail for the jailer. Because he had spent the time in Potiphar's house managing the entire household before that. because he had spent the time in the field managing the flock. I mean, think for a moment. Pharaoh, and it was typical that Pharaoh's family would have been trained in special schools by special teachers to be prepared to lead Egypt. Common people didn't get to go to these schools. They didn't get to access these tutors. Does that make sense? Pharaoh brought teachers in for his family to prepare his son to take his place. But for his nieces and his nephews, they all became officials. Even the magicians and the wise men, they went to school to be trained up, and they had this system in place, yet none of them were qualified to do this thing. But Pharaoh saw in Joseph that he was. I would argue that if it wasn't for the past 13 years of pain and of preparation, that Joseph wouldn't have been ready for the moment that God placed him into. So those past 13 years, contrary to the kind of thing we would have heard from Job's friends, they weren't a punishment. It wasn't God's judgment on Joseph. God wasn't being cruel or mean. But it was this perfect recipe of preparation. I cook with an Instapot. It's a pressure cooker. And if I put the chicken body or the beef bones and the carrots and the celery and the bay leaves and the right things in there, I can turn it on, and with pressure and time, something wonderful comes out. I like soup stock. That's what God's doing in Joseph. And I believe it's what God's doing in us. Again, sometimes we cause the misery in our own lives. But for some of us, you go through these challenging, these hard things. And if we can, like Joseph, choose to stand before the God of all creation, if we can say, God, what are you teaching me today? What are you doing in me? How am I the clay, and how are you the potter today? What are you making me into? God can prepare us for when that moment comes. We can be the only one prepared to rise to the moment. If God hadn't prepared Joseph, if God hadn't chose to prepare someone like Joseph, the ancient Near East may have withered, died of starvation. But God chose not Joseph, this 17-year-old hotshot who saw visions and dreams and knew his brothers would one day bow before him. That version of Joseph, not ready to lead the nation of Egypt. I don't even believe that Joseph, the 30-year-old shepherd, would have had the skills necessary. But it was the Joseph who had been through the fire and through the test in Potiphar's house, in the dungeon, and now before Pharaoh, that had been prepared to do what God was doing next. So how is God preparing you? And do you have faith that he's preparing you for something good? Have you allowed God to prepare you to be ready to answer the call? Because he will call. And he wants to partner with you
to do his work, to accomplish his purpose. And if we say no, he'll find somebody else. But we'll miss out on what it is to partner with the Most High God. Let's worship together.